COVID-19 gets us started today, not because there's a major flare-up, let's make that clear, but we're still trying to figure out exactly where the disease came from and which other animals can carry and transmit it, other than humans. Oregon State University got a federal grant to take a hand in that research, testing wild animals for the presence of COVID. Brian Dolan is Associate Professor of Immunology in the Veterinary School at Oregon State University and the lead researcher and our guest. Brian, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Just in case people are unclear on the concept of zoonotic diseases, what is the major concern here, the driving force behind the research?
Well, in the case of zoonotic diseases, the driving concern is spillover from animal reservoirs of diseases into humans. And when this happens, sometimes it's an isolated incident, sort of a one-off case, but other times it can lead to sustained transmission of a new pathogen in the human population. And that's likely what we saw with COVID-19.
Do we know enough yet about spillover to have any level of assuredness about, you know, which diseases might make a jump and which won't?
No, I don't think we can say with absolute certainty. There are certainly diseases that people are more concerned about than others. However, it's really difficult to make absolute determinations because the rate of pathogen evolution is such that they can change. And then all of a sudden, you have the potential for a zoonotic transmission.
So are there some common disease pathways, some animals that are more likely to be a part of transmission for diseases that make their way to humans?
In some instances, there are. There are some animals, bats, for instance, which seem to harbor a large number of viruses, which is just part of their natural history. Other times, there are animals that can harbor diseases that are somewhat important to us, such as rabies or something like that. However, the general patterns are tough to discern.
Is there a general sense that we haven't scratched the surface? We don't fully know which animals are capable of spillover?
Like I said, there's some animals where bats, for instance, where it's highly possible that there'll be spillover events into other animals, including humans. And yet there's other instances where sometimes a disease may have an endemic host that we don't know about. And we didn't know that the disease could potentially be a problem until it happens.
All right. So let's talk about the research here and the grant, $908,732 from APHIS, the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. Talk about how the grant came about and what it says to do.
Sure. Well, at the College of Veterinary Medicine here at Oregon State University, we had been looking at COVID-19 for a while, concerned obviously about the implications for transmission to animals that we may be seeing in the clinic. And the Oregon Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory was involved in a lot of the testing initially early on for COVID-19. So we kind of had an existing infrastructure in place to look for COVID-19 and to look for the potential to analyze the viral genome and sequence it to determine where, along which lineage of virus, we were seeing cases. And in addition, my own lab was interested in doing some cell biology, trying to determine which animals may be more or less susceptible to viral infection. So we decided to collaborate, submit a grant to the U.S. Department of Agriculture to sort of look at, could we potentially identify cases of COVID in wild animals? And if so, would we be able to determine when and where the virus entered into the animal population?
So it sounds like this is, if not work you're already doing already, very much an extension of what you are doing already.
We hadn't really planned on doing wildlife surveillance. That was something that was new to the project. We had been testing different animals samples as they had come in at the diagnostic lab to determine if they were COVID positive or not. But our interest was largely, what are we missing? Are there cryptic reservoirs in wild animals where the virus may have established and may have started circulating? And we may be missing those because we're not routinely testing those specimens. So that was really the emphasis for doing that, to look in Oregon to see where the virus may be circulating.
Brian Dolan is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an associate professor of immunology in the Veterinary College at Oregon State University, the lead researcher into some testing of wild animal species for the SARS-CoV-2 virus that causes COVID-19 under a grant from the federal government. You are welcome to join the conversation by email on the Jefferson Exchange at jx@jeffnet.org. Two letters, jx@jeffnet.org. We use the term reservoir now, and I've noticed this before when we talk about spillover. There's a couple of different steps when diseases end up coming from animals to humans. Can you explain hosts and reservoirs and how all that tends to work?
A reservoir would be a population where a particular pathogen can exist and can spread without really being sort of stamped out. So the disease can sort of exist within particular populations, either because those animals are resistant to the disease itself, or they've sort of just accepted it as part of their existence, and it really doesn't cause major physiological damage to them. So they sort of just sustain this presence of the disease, and that can result in spillover. The host would be the actual animal that has the virus, or the whatever pathogen we are referring to.
Mm-hmm. Now, I noticed that both in the announcement from OSU, and you use the term yourself about samples from wildlife. So what actually does this study involve the handling of?
Well, a lot of times it involves specimens that have been submitted to the Oregon Veterinary Diagnostic Lab for testing for other diseases, primarily rabies. So if we get mammal species that are submitted, animals that were found dead, then we can simply test those specimens at the same time that we're doing other tests. Rabies is obviously an important disease that we're constantly surveilling for. This would allow us to sort of piggyback on some of the existing specimens that we get to also test to determine, do they have SARS-CoV-2? And in addition to that, there's some other stakeholders that are involved, such as wildlife rehabilitation centers, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, that are submitting samples to us as well as part of their ongoing work.
So there's no major field effort here. You don't have to go out and, you know, with trank guns and fell animals in the wild to bring in your samples.
No, that would be a incredibly difficult and expensive endeavor to do that particular study. However, we could, if we do find that there's a particular species that may be more susceptible than not to the virus, then we may be able to target that in the future. Here, we're trying to just cast a broad net to test as many different animal species as we can and as many different specimens as we can to try to get a handle on what patterns may exist. And then from there, follow-up is needed, we can pursue that.
How long is the list already about animals that can at least harbor the virus?
That's an excellent question. I don't have the updated numbers of where it where we stand currently nationally or even internationally in terms of which animals have been the virus has been detected in, but it is several. It's primarily in terms of wildlife species. One of the major concerns is white-tailed deer, because it seems like white-tailed deer are particularly adept at either becoming infected or even transmitting the virus from deer to deer.
Okay. So, all right. So deer certainly have a concern. You mentioned bats already, and they do seem to come up a lot when we talk about zoonotic diseases. What is it about bats that often puts them in the pathway to of diseases to humans?
Oh, that is an excellent question, and one that we just don't have an answer to yet. There's been some studies that have suggested that the immune system of bats functions in a particular way that would allow more viruses to exist within the bat and the bat to tolerate those viruses. So it wouldn't necessarily become sick. It would just sort of harbor those viruses. And then there's a few other studies that suggest that the enhanced metabolism that bats have because they have to fly and they burn through so many calories, maybe that plays a role in how bats can become infected or sustained, at least can sustain a viral pathogen. However, it's really not fully known or appreciated how or why bats seem to harbor so many viruses.
Brian Dolan is with Oregon State University's Veterinary College and Associate Professor of Immunology, the lead researcher into this process of testing wild animal specimens for COVID-19 virus. You can join us with your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So it is just mammals here? And the reason I mumbled the word animals there is because I was trying to say mammals at the same time. It is just mammals you're dealing with?
So far, most I am unaware of any instances of birds that have contracted COVID-19, so most of the concern is with mammal populations.
Okay, so Oregon State's announcement of the project mentions concerns that you have about the mutation of COVID-19 in non-human animals. Elaborate on what you think could happen. It sounds like there are several possible scenarios.
Sure. I think the most likely scenario, if a virus becomes established within a new animal population, is that whatever mutations occur will probably make the virus more adaptable to that host and less likely to infect humans as a result of that. That's the most likely scenario. However, I do think it's worth keeping an eye on the mutations that do occur in any animal-associated viruses to determine if they are acquiring mutations that we have seen in the past that seem to give the virus a fitness advantage or in humans, for instance, because that could indicate that there's a potential for the virus to spill back into humans. So I think it's worth keeping an eye on how the virus mutates in different wild animal populations. However, the most likely case is that any mutations that do occur will likely make the virus more able to transmit and be sustained within those animal populations.
Because it's essentially become something like a happy home for the virus. It's like, hey, we're living here, we're surviving, we're not killing our hosts, we're fine.
I think that would be an excellent way to think about it. If the virus is able to do that and to sort of achieve that within a particular animal species, it's more likely to sort of continue in that way.
So I understand part of the research is that you'll be sequencing the genome of the COVID virus, the SARS-CoV-2, as well?
That's correct. If we're able to find positive samples, and when we find positive samples, if the sample is good enough and we have enough material, we will do a whole genome sequence where we will try to identify the entire genome of that particular SARS-CoV-2 virus, and then using that, we will attempt to determine when this virus entered into the animal population. So if you sort of follow the idea of the general variants, if the sequence comes back and it seems to resemble most resemble an alpha variant, for instance, then we know that that particular SARS-CoV-2 specimen has been circulating within animals for quite some time. Whereas if it is more closely related to the Omicron clade, then we know that this is a more recent introduction into the animal population.
Oh, because it would have gotten to the animals from humans?
True, yes.
Oh, okay. We have an email here from J.S. in Talent who asks about the white-tailed deer comment about why white-tailed deer more than black-tailed deer, the type you have in Southern Oregon.
Well, we haven't. The answer to that question is we don't really know why white-tailed deer seem to be so susceptible to SARS-CoV-2. And we hope to test more black-tailed deer samples to determine if they are, in fact, positive for the virus or not. We don't know at this time, but it is kind of interesting how white-tailed deer seem to be susceptible in multiple different locations across the United States for the virus.
To do the work of testing for COVID, do you need to bring in any additional people or equipment to OSU?
Well, no, actually, we have a lot of the infrastructure in place from the initial days of the pandemic, including the sequencing capabilities and the ability to do the diagnostic work. So we were lucky in that way that we were set up to do this experiment. And we, as part of the department here and other departments on campus, we've been involved in a lot of wildlife work in the past. So we had the existing knowledge and infrastructure in place.
And what's the number of animal samples you hope to process over the course of the 2 years?
We hope to get above 1,500 samples in the next 2 years. We've just started beginning this process, so it's been sort of a slow ramp-up procedure, but we hope to increase that number pretty soon. But the goal would be, I think we put down 1,600 samples to be tested.
Brian Dolan, at the heart of this, we still really don't know where COVID came from for sure, do we?
Yeah, I would say that it's still not fully known or appreciated where the virus came from, and it's definitely not my area of expertise or what I've been studying here, but it does seem like it does remain a mystery, although there are lots of coronaviruses that have been detected in numerous species around the world that appear to be closely related to SARS-CoV-2.
Okay, we'll be watching what happens, and probably we'll talk to you down the road about that as well. The grant ends in May of 2025, and that should be more than enough time to count 1,500, 1,600 samples from animals for the presence of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19. Brian Dolan heads the research at Oregon State University. He's an associate professor of immunology in the Veterinary College. Thanks for joining us with the details here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Short break on the exchange. As we head to the break, I want to share a little more animal news with you today. We just got word late yesterday that the Jackson County Animal Shelter is closed to the public because there appears to be a type of respiratory illness that mimics kennel cough. We've heard about other respiratory diseases showing up in dogs around the country. Don't know if this is directly related to that, but Jackson County's Animal Shelter closed to the public for the time being because of a respiratory illness there.